Hello, welcome back to the Masonic Roundtable, a weekly program where Masons from around the world get together to talk about Masonic news and opinions in a friendly and social manner. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions expressed here are solely opinions of the participants and do not represent any Grand Lodge statements or positions. Make sure you keep your conversations open for the public and on the level. To interact with us, you can comment alongside us live here on Facebook, hello and good evening, as well as on the YouTube. So, love to see you and see some of your super chats. If you want to throw a super chat in there, love to talk on the air. So, good evening and hello. My name is John Ruark. I'm a past master of the Patriot Lodge number 1957 in Fairfax, Virginia. And we do have the full house tonight. Let's go over and talk to Mike the intern. Hello and good evening.
Good evening. Mike Hambrecht, Mike the intern, also known as Hammy here. Lodge Education Officer and Senior Warden of Lakeshore Lodge number 307 in Madison, Ohio, as well as the Senior Steward for the Castle Island Virtual Lodge of the Grand Lodge of Manitoba. So, good evening, everyone. Hope everyone enjoys being here tonight.
I know I do. Jason Richards, how are you tonight? Wait for it. Go.
I'm good. Good. John, you forgot to mention that people can also follow along with us on Clubhouse tonight.
Yay!
Because we're doing a simulcast of the Masonic Roundtable on Clubhouse.
That's what all the cool kids
are
doing.
Well. Oh, totally. I am a past master of Vacation Lodge number 16 in Clifton, Virginia, and member of the Colonial Lodge number 1821 in Washington, D.C.
Good to see you. Good to hear from you. Same for, let's see, Robert Johnson. Hello, how are you tonight?
Doing well. Hope you guys are all doing well also. Past Master Waukegan 78, current sitting secretary, Space Novum 1183 in Libertyville, Illinois, and the host of the Whence Came You Masonic Podcast. Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much. Your beard game is going strong. It's the quarantine beard looking good. How about Wands? Let's check out Wands. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Good evening, brothers. Juan Sepulveda here from Orange Blossom Lodge number 80 and the brother behind thewindingstairs.com. Good to have you with us tonight.
Okay. All right.
Hey, Juan, next time you introduce yourself, you should unmute yourself on Clubhouse.
It was an awkward pause, pregnant pause. But anyway, that's the fun part about juggling lots of things at once. So let's see. Tonight, before we get into it, I want to give a special shout out to the patrons who've been supporting the show. This is partly contributing to Juan's sexy appearance, partly. But it's we really do appreciate all the help and support that you guys have done for the show over the year and a half. And we're getting some new toys to play with, some new tech to help them make the show even better. If you want to continue your support, head on over to patreon.com/themasonicroundtable and chip in a few bucks, and then we'll have some little behind-the-scenes things, some private Facebook groups. It's a lot of fun. So, see you over there. Let's see. Tonight's topic, we will be talking about, is Masonry for everyone? ? So, that's the big premise, because there's been, we've talked about how Masonry, during the pandemic, has obviously been disrupted. Let's just call it for what it is. It's been through a major disruption. And as people have more time at home, if people have the anxiety that comes with either working from home, dealing with kids at home, dealing with virtual school or not, just everyone's routines have been completely shifted. So that creates a different state that people are in. Right, wrong, or different. Like if some people's states are better, some people's states are worse. But we have shifted to a different position in our life. In doing that, we also know that can cause some tension, even with the people that we'll call brothers to the end. We start to kind of act out a little bit, only because it's natural human behavior. We miss the social connection, and yet It's not always as friendly as we like it to be. So that's caused lots of different threads to blow up over, different groups like on Reddit or on the Winding Stairs Facebook group. It's caused people to kind of absorb and react different ways. But tonight we really want to talk about is Freemasonry for everyone? The subtext, the subtitle to this really could be Guarding the West Gate Part 2, right? So really, let's kind of open it up. Do we think in general that Freemasonry should or could be for every person who's interested at all in joining the fraternity? We can talk about all the, belief in God and there must be a male in mainstream Masonry, all that aside. But if you meet all those minimum qualifications, is it still for everyone that fits that? Yes or no?
So my question there in response to your question would be, if Freemasonry is truly for everyone, then does it still have value?
Oh, if it's everything for everybody, then is it
right.
Nothing for nobody?
Well, yes. So, I mean, it's just, it's a question of, does inherent exclusivity in Freemasonry raise its intrinsic value? And I'm not making a judgment either way. It's just, a question to ponder. If it is free and open with no barriers to entry whatsoever, there's a supply and demand, economic function at play here, where you would ultimately, if supply is completely available, does that mean that demand rises with it? I don't necessarily think so.
You had me at economics.
Costco. Ask Costco, right? Costco has tiered membership. Anybody can join. You can get that executive membership. Find out what the demographics are, what happens when you allow anybody to join and become an executive. I mean, the thing that you're driving
Costco at still has a limiter, though, and that's the membership price.
We have that. We got dues.
That's fair.
Really cheap dues, but.
And Costco's more expensive.
Costco's more expensive than some
hell, dues. Having an American Express annual fee card is more expensive for some folks. I mean, look, the value proposition, we've talked about that a million times, a million ways from Sunday. But the fact being, like, I feel that question 100%, Jason. I mean, if you take it away, yeah, then like, if it's for everybody, then it does lose some value. But then, is it elitist? And that's what sometimes gets driven home. I remember some years ago, there was a brother who had a son who had some mental challenges. And in order for the dad to spend more time with the son, the dad to be active in Lodge, they did enter, pass, and raise his son, right? Who is not somebody, he's probably collective IQ is, 50 or 60. It was an interesting thing because we have all these stipulations about who can join the fraternity. And by excluding people, you necessarily then have people who couldn't do what that man did. The question then is, are we just jerks?
Well, we don't. That's a good question. You don't have to be a jerk just because you have some standards that you want for your organization. And if you think on a broader sense, try to look at examples of other organizations. Is it, is the Knights of Columbus for everybody? Is the, what else? Just like your example of Elks. Costco is a good one. The Elks. I have family members who are in the Elks, and they do have selection process, and you have to meet certain types of criteria. And on top of that, people need to like you. You need to be a decent human being to be a part of it. And if you exclude people that are you know, and I'll use the word undesirable, then if you admit them, it is to the detriment of the entire organization. And by undesirable, of course, some people may think of that what they may, but think of someone who is undesirable, someone who has perhaps an affinity for like a pedophile, that, for example, someone who likes the younger crowd a little too much. We don't want them at all. Like, they're part of that line in the sand that shall not be crossed. I've mentioned before, when you invite someone to join the fraternity, you have to be comfortable enough for them to sit at the table with your family. I shouldn't have to hide my phone number from that person if he's going to be a member of the fraternity. That tells you a lot.
Litmus test. I like that. Because it's the, you know, would you trust your wife alone with this person? Would you trust your kids alone with this person? Right? Could you leave, you know, $50 on the table in front of them and say, hold on to this. I'll be right back and make sure that $50 will be there when you come back.
Remember when we went to Tampa? We were very busy preparing our speeches, speaking, participating with the people, and I didn't have someone to man the table that I had with my art and my collectibles. So I had a box. It was the honor system. It was open. Anybody who walked into that building, we expected them to be Masons, and we expected them to have values. We have hundreds of dollars in that little box, and people kept on, you know, they'll take their own change. You don't have to wait for someone to attend you. There was a box with money there that anybody could have taken. Nobody took a cent.
Yeah, I didn't have a sign out. I put it's business time out on a table, and I came, like, literally went to, like, use the restroom, came back, and there was, like, you know, $20 bill shoved under one of the books, like, that they had taken a book. And so, like, I just stepped out for a second. And that's, again, that's the caliber of people that we want in the fraternity. And so the antithesis to that is, you know, what is the lower threshold? What is the cutoff? Even if you don't have the, you know, explicit cutoff of, you know, you have to be a man, freeborn, good report, and not an atheist, those kind of
well-recommended.
Yeah, simple check boxes. Mm-hmm. But then when we're really talking about guarding the West Gate, is there a lower threshold, you know, that, and it's going to be different for every lodge, it's going to be different for every culture, but I think we can all agree, we're getting the head nod here, that there is some sort of implied floor threshold of letting just, you know, we're not letting anyone with a pulse in through to our doors. So now we have the discussion of, if it's more than a pulse and less than, you know, a saint walking around, where is that? And that's going to be part of the conversation tonight. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Cammy?
Yeah, I think that it comes down to, what does your lodge want? But there's also, even in that, there's also standards that, you know, you as one of the members of that lodge have to sit back and look at the potential candidate who's coming into the lodge and say, who are we going to let in? You know, who are you going to let in, rather, you know, because it comes down to, your vote. So do you, you know, vote the guy in and say, you know what? Everybody else kind of likes him, so I'll go ahead and do this. No, the reality is, you got to take a look and see what the quality of the man is. If there's something that you believe strongly enough about, in his moral character that you don't agree with, then the answer is no to that. And I have to say that about the moral character, because that comes down to, is he a pedophile? Is he a racist? Is he a member of a militia group that is liable to, you know, be revolting against the government? What is it? Has he got a felony in his background? And when did that felony occur? Those are things that you, when you're looking at this, is you have to decide, is there a threshold here in my vote that says I'll let him in? And that's not being elitist, even, you know, I mean, because we're not talking about, does the guy, have a bachelor's degree? Is he a millionaire? Is he? We're not looking at that. We're looking at his character, and that's a different piece of the, you know, puzzle to consider. I mean, yeah, if you want to sit back and go, well, he can't afford the dues, so typically on a regular basis he can't, so no, I don't want him in. Well, okay, I mean, you're doing that for his benefit, really, in the long run, and the lodge's as well, because if you know the guy doesn't make enough money to pay his dues, he's not a good fit for that lodge. You know, there might be another lodge he's a better fit for, if that's the case, financially, you know. But that doesn't make him not a good possible fit as a Mason. But when it comes down to his character, that's what's going to matter the most.
And so, Mike, question for you. You know, what happens when brethren differ on that moral threshold or they differ on what is or is not immoral? Case in point, Tennessee and Georgia banning homosexuals from Freemasonry.
Right. And, you know, other grand jurisdictions have weighed in on that as well. California and DC have sat back and said, you guys are wrong. We're not going to recognize you for that. Now, mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that is a sticking point. I mean, because according to the, I won't even say the majority, but I will say the Grand Lodge in that jurisdiction, which is a small group of men, I'll put it to that, sit back and say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Do I agree with that? No. But they do, you know, and does, you know, and enough of them do in that grand jurisdiction, though. We know that because they continually voted the rest of that line to continue, and this isn't something that has been changed within that grand in those two grand jurisdictions. So now I'm not saying that they're right. I'm just saying that's an opinion of a group. And are they entitled to that? Yes. Same as I'm entitled to the opinion that we shouldn't have racists in the craft. Should we have people in the craft who are members of terrorist organizations? Absolutely not. You know, and I won't go into which ones are or are not, because I don't really want us to get into, you know, that argument as well, you know. But the reality is, if I know that a potential candidate, and that's when we can do something about it, because once you're in, unless you actually commit an un-Masonic offense that we can bring you up on charges, and there's enough people to decide that you have to kick you out. We can't just do that, you know. So it can't be just my opinion going, well, you know, you joined a terrorist organization, and so now we're going to kick. Unless he actually does something,
yeah,
you know, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, we I think, did we allude to this in just a couple of weeks ago about like requalification to kind of keep mm-hmm. that dues card? Like,
right.
Once yeah. you're in, you're pretty good. That's a little secret for everyone, you know, waiting to join. Like, you're good for a while as long as you keep your dues paid and you don't yeah. actively, you know, commit crimes, be a felon, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you're pretty good regardless of whichever way your moral compass decides to go. You can keep your nose clean up through your Master Mason degree, and as long as you don't get caught, like, unfortunately, that's called society. It's not called, you know, being a bad Mason. It's just, you're going to have bad apples in every bunch.
Mm-hmm. There's a tricky thing there about the moral compass, and, you know, Hammy touched on that briefly when he talks about the homosexuality component. Okay, well, there are people that listen to this podcast. Statistically, they think homosexuality is immoral, plain and simple. Is it because of their upbringing? Is it just part of their innate moral compass? Or is it part of a doctrine? Is it part of a religion? And that's part of the whole challenge that we have with mixing religion in with the craft. When you start taking the views of a specific religion to dominate the whole strata of the fraternity, that becomes problematic. I don't think that homosexuality is immoral, personally. And I tell you that because I'm confident that it isn't. Now, you may be listening or watching and you think that it's immoral. That's a difference in opinion. We can have an intelligent conversation about it. We can have a respectful conversation about it. And it's tough, you know. But if we were to say, well, we can't allow homosexuals to be a member of the fraternity, that's not equitable to a restriction on someone who has a criminal background or someone who has a bad repute in the community or someone who once you meet them get to delve a little bit into their affairs, you recognize that they're not trustworthy. Those are different things. One is one is based in love and the other one is based in hate or disrespect. Those are two very different things.
So would you say then, Juan, this is getting into a really like philosophical argument. I love it. Would you say then that morality, as far as the craft is concerned, is confined to the laws of the land in which you reside?
Relativism?
Yeah, I mean, that's how it behaves. You know, that's how it quacks right now. And is that the goal when Masons are called to be free thinkers and be able to break from the bonds of superstition?
Dude, that's a really good question, Jason, because not only are we there to like be good citizens of wherever we're residing, but we're also meant to aspire towards like the noble truth, that the religion that all men can agree on, right? So the way I interpret line is that there's the religion that all men agree on is like, let's get away from all of the, you know, well, you baptize on Thursdays and I baptize on Friday. Let's get away from all of that crap. And like, let's just focus on
you guys just sprinkle.
Essence. Yeah. Yeah. No, you submerge, right? No. Let's focus on the, like, you know, are we trying to be good people and like believe that there is a creator that, you know, something bigger than ourselves we should be aspiring towards? Like, that's the religion that all men should agree on. And then, you know, stop worrying about the details.
Yeah, because when it comes down to it, you know, you essentially get your morality through two different ways. You have religious and sectarian morality, and you have, you know, a religious or legal morality, or, you know, state morality. And it's just it's very interesting when you get into an organization that is supposed to be ecumenical, one, but then also a system of morality. We see this time and time again, especially in the United States over the past, you know, decade or so, where people holding differing opinions on what is or is not moral can lead to a lot of strife and a lot of problems.
I think there's something to be said for the idea that whatever is progression, like if you're not for progressive ideals, it may be enough in just that statement to say that non-progressiveness is un-Masonic. And what I mean is, well, so that's the other thing is like, where you guys talked about morals and the idea of it being locked into an area. And so that's something I was thinking a lot about just over the last couple of days. And it's like the right thing to do is essentially the majority viewpoint. And so the hope then is that as humanity is moving forward, people in mass accept, you know, historical facts. They accept what they've learned, and what's what's able to be proven to them and see the fruits of labors and what happens to, you know, when we use rotten fruit, right? Like, it doesn't take a genius for a society to see what laws work and make people happy and what doesn't. And so we base our viewpoints on those things, and then we can say, well, that works much better and nobody's getting hurt and everybody's happy. So we move along. This is progress. And so when we have like viewpoints such as racism or, you know, anti-homosexuality or whatever that is, you know, those are just, I'm not picking on them. I'm using them as common archetypes because everybody can relate. Everybody's heard those arguments. But when we see things that are anti those things, you're creating strife and you're creating problems for people who are otherwise good, wholesome people. And so I think there's something to be said for like a more like, yes, it could be, you know, like what's right in your house, what's right in your neighborhood, your community, your society, your region, the nation. But ultimately, that still has to answer to the test of time. And over the course of, you know, hundreds, maybe 1,000 years, we will see that we were in an intellectualized age of barbarism.
Yeah. Have you heard of the moral landscape? I really have an affinity for the description by Sam Harris. He's a philosopher and a neuropsychologist. He describes the moral landscape as imagine a landscape that has peaks and valleys, and you have these areas in which there are very high moral things. I disappeared. I'm not in the screen somehow. wait.
Your video died.
Is that why? Well, sorry. So there we are. So in the moral landscape, he talks about how do we determine whether something is moral or not? And he describes, if we think about avoiding suffering, okay, anything that is done to that takes you in the spectrum of avoiding suffering, okay, and maximizing suffering, you know, think of that as the whole spectrum of morality. So you may be able to ascertain whether something is moral or not in the proportion it promotes suffering or it alleviates it, or perhaps promotes well-being and happiness or reduces it. And if we think, you know, taking an example of racial differences, for people in past, you know, past decades, the fact that someone's skin color, you know, this beautiful olive skin that I have, would have been considered immoral to meddle with in a relationship with someone of lighter skin. What is immoral about a difference in the wavelength that bounces off of my skin? It makes no sense. So people,
you just have
of color,
melatonin.
I love you too. If you think about people of color, the suffering they would have had to endure by being considered a second grade citizen, or by being prevented from engaging in a loving relationship that they truly feel is adequate, then the law of the land, if we were to just look at, you know, is morality what the law of the land dictates, then it would have been immoral for a dark person to come together with a white. So that moral landscape, if you think about that specific scenario, what alleviates the suffering from the colored man is not making him feel like he is less than just because of the color of the skin. If a man loves another man and wants to join him in matrimony, are we alleviating his suffering by not discriminating against him? Or are we promoting well-being and happiness by giving it a nod and say, you know, it's fine for you to do that? So I like that because it's devoid of religion. I don't need some sacred text or some claim or some interpretation from anybody for me to determine whether something is moral or not. And that's my personal
opinion. If you think about morality and what it's actually intended, comes across the same thing with ethics as well. It's what's right or wrong. It isn't what's right or wrong just for you or just for your small group. It goes into a much larger scale on that. And it even comes down to is morality doesn't just define whether or not it's legal, because it can still be legal and be immoral. You know, there are possibilities for that. Because just because the laws aren't there doesn't make it moral. Now, that does, and it also is about a severity, because legalities have other reasons, but more, and it's more of a way that society decides on that. But morality is, again, just really about specific rights or wrong. And it's not about, yes, we've based it throughout cultures on religion and so forth, but it's not tied directly to that in its base. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I have the perfect solution for this. What I propose is that from henceforth, that as part of the interrogation process of interviewing a candidate who might want to join the ranks of Freemasonry, that in addition to all of the other rules that we've established and procedures, that we also silently follow this candidate for Masonry, and we follow them actually to a Target or a Walmart or something like that, and we actually observe from a distance to see if they return the shopping cart. Because there is this thing going around the internet right now about the shopping cart theory. Can you tell if a person is a good person by the fact that when no one's looking, do they return the shopping cart in the little section designated for shopping carts, or do they leave it propped up against the curb, on the sidewalk, wherever, right? The shopping cart theory.
That's a terrible argument.
No, I love it. Let's do it.
Because somebody is always watching now.
I'll tell you why it's irrelevant. Is because are you a good person by ensuring employment of an individual whose job it is to return those cards?
Yeah, my dad said he threw out beer cans when he was growing up out on the highway because, hey, someone's got to clean them up. I don't want to give that guy not have a job. I don't want to put a guy out of work because my beer can's not there for him to pick. Come on.
The chain gang needs something to do out there.
That's right.
Robert, you're wrong.
All right,
shopping cart test. Let's do it.
Tell you that.
Let's do it. But
the reality is, there's always somebody watching now. If you're in that shopping market parking lot, there are at least most of them 6 or 8 cameras on you. So somebody's always watching.
That's true.
Have you seen Cart Narcs?
No.
No, I actually haven't watched that.
If you haven't seen Card Narcs, I'm going to share a link.
It's a YouTube channel?
YouTube, yeah. Oh, this dude hides in the parking lots and waits for someone to not take their cart. And then he has like a siren and everything. He's like, whoop, 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 whoop. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? You know, you're going to bang someone's car. Make sure you put it back. You know, you're interrupting other people's stuff. You know, you're blocking here the
man, and here I was envisioning a guy almost in a costume like the Noid from the old Pizza Hut commercials. Oh, avoid the Noid jumping out, you know.
That's funny. You never see the guy, so he could be.
That's true.
Yeah, this is true.
So one thing I want to pull the thread on is another thing that this conversation about is masonry for everyone. One of the catchphrases of masonry is that we take good men and make them better. Right? We don't take bad men. We don't take everybody. I mean, it's right there in the phrase. We don't take everybody. We take good men and make them better. And so one way that I heard this explained to me by one of my early mentors in masonry was that masonry takes good men and make them better. We don't take bad men and turn them into good men. That's for religion, right? That's for religion to do. Religion is there to take the, you know, prevenient grace so that that anybody, as broken as they can be redeemed, can be saved, et cetera, et cetera. And so, so already that's implying some sort of separation between religion. You know, masonry is not a religion, but it has religious themes. But, you know, we're not here to fix everybody through moral instruction. We have moral instruction for people who are ready for it, who are already good, who already have a foundation that they can build upon. And so, you know, one of my just kind of pulling through that if you have a requirement in that phrase, if you have a requirement to be a good man to join the fraternity to become better, that implies that you've done a little bit of work foundationally to join Freemasonry, and you are aspiring to be better. Because we don't take good men and make them good, or gooder, right? We take good men and make them better. And so...
Or as one Mason explained to me, masonry takes good men and makes them bitter.
Bitter. Not better. Mm-hmm. They actually... Yeah, it was a typo, actually. Not better, but bitter.
But or batter on Saturday mornings.
Batterday.
And so where I'm going with this is, you know, I'm going to have an unpopular opinion to say that if your goal of joining the fraternity is not to be a better person, then I'd say don't show up. Like, don't try to apply for Freemasonry. That's just my opinion. But where I'm going with that is not everyone has the self-discipline to try to apply anything, right? We can talk about, you know, the deep philosophical Masons versus the ones who are just there for a social fraternal activity. Everyone has to go through the same 3 degrees. Everyone has to learn something to join, right? It's not the Elks. It's not the Rotary. It's not all the other, you know, we'll take your check and you're good to go. So that's kind of my semi-unpopular opinion, is that you really need to have some threshold of wanting to be better, of wanting to apply, of wanting to expand your horizons in order to be a Mason. And so if you are not willing to do that, if you are caught up in your biases, if you're caught up in your prejudices, then maybe join another organization. Thoughts on that?
So, you know, even folks who look at Masonry and join Masonry purely for the fraternal aspect, that's still a personal enrichment, and you know, something that raises your own quality of life and makes you better and more rounded. So I would tend to agree that the foundational premise of Freemasonry is self enrichment, self improvement, self betterment, and I would agree that if that's not something that you have any interest in, some people just, you know, even aren't necessarily, you know, self-reflect, you know, they don't have that self-reflection, and that self-awareness, to, you know, recognize that there's a higher thing to strive for. And, I agree that if you don't have an interest in improving yourself and becoming better, you know, whatever that means, or don't have the self-awareness to, or the desire to strive for that, then I don't think you should be in the organization, not, you know, or should join it, really. Because at that point, you know, there's not much you're going to get out of it.
Well,
but what if the other aspect, like the fellowship at least, and, you know, they may have no interest for becoming better, but they want to hang with the dudes and they want to contribute to charity or something.
Right. And what you just said, too, is that, you know, if you're really in it just for the social aspect and, you know, the fellowship, right there, you're more than likely going to get enriched anyway, whether you intend it to or not. You know, I mean, and I'll put it there. There's plenty of guys out there, myself included, who have pretty much been loners for a good portion of their lives, you know, and they come into something like this. And yes, we, you know, prior to this, I've talked to people, I've had friends and whatnot, but not in the manner and numbers that I actually can say I have now, you know. And the fact that, you know, I can sit here in front of an audience of however many we have on tonight and talk with four other guys that, you know, are across the country. That's a whole change right there, you know, for me. And, you know, on top of that, I can go into a lodge of 30 guys who I may barely know or not even know at all because, you know, I travel to their lodge and I get up and introduce myself, you know, when the master asks me to, you know, when I'm introduced to the lodge itself, you know. You know, it's something, you know, that changed me in ways that I couldn't have even predicted before going through that. Now, you know, is that the only thing I got out of Masonry? No, I've gotten much more than that. But that's just, I mean, there's plenty of guys that might be all they need, you know. Or even the travel, you know, I mean, some guys travel for work and they're even kind of loners. This changes that lonership, you know. They now become a guy who goes into another city and has friends to go visit. Friends he never met before, but they are friends. As soon as they meet, so to speak, you know, I mean, you know, not your best friends, but they are your friends. They're your brothers, you know.
I often wonder about
it changes each person that impacts that.
I often wonder about some of those things that you're alluding to, Mike. I mean, for a lot of it, it boils down to intent. I mean, when you look at the law, right? Like so many laws are based on not the crime itself, but the intent that happened before the act was committed. And so for intent, it feels like there's something that should be said here, because we've had these kind of talks before when John said, you know, if you're not coming into this to be better, then this isn't for you. And maybe take that a step further, because sure, you might be coming in to be better. That's great. But that's an awfully big door still. And I would contend that by simply saying something, or like if you were somebody who could not, it's hard to say this in any kind of way that is more objective, I guess. But for instance, if somebody knows that you have bigoted ideas, I wouldn't let you in. I'd blackball you, absolutely. And so, like, with that intent, right? Like, maybe you want to join and you think, like, this is how I grew up and I'm joining a lodge. And I joined a lodge, you know, in some area of the country that, you know, bigoted beliefs are still, you know, a common thing. And then, if you, let's say you move to another area of the country and you're a brother, and I witness a behavior that I would consider bigoted, controversial, I know, and there absolutely could be consequences for saying this, but I wouldn't consider that person a brother. And those to me are people that should not have been brought into the fraternity. That's why I think this fraternity is not for everyone. I do believe that our standard, and in fact, our entire ritual and the things that we stand up for, you know, all encompassing things like freedom, liberty, equality, fraternity, sorry about the dogs, all of these things are taught within the fraternity. And if you didn't glean those things, or maybe they were just lip service because it's a ritual that you happen to go through in your neck of the woods, I feel like that lodge probably also maybe shouldn't exist. It's just striking, right? I think a few years ago we talked a little bit about racism in the craft, and somebody said, you know, it's crazy that in 20 whatever that this still exists. I mean, Juan, you put it best, right? What did you say? You said just because Jason called it melatonin because I think he likes sleeping pills, but melanin.
I was being sarcastic, and I screwed up the joke.
I know.
Melanin, not melatonin. But I was just going to let it slide.
You were going to let it slide.
He's well protected from COVID. That's the get your melatonin in.
That's, yeah. So with
you take a with multivitamin. Like,
so with melanin, right? Like, we know that, I mean, there's just no scientific basis to suggest anything is somebody is less than a man or less than a woman or whatever the case. And just like if somebody is homosexual, whether lesbian, gay, bisexual, whatever the LGBTQ community, you know, part of it you, somebody might identify with, the idea is, I mean, drive it home here, being quote unquote gay has only been something that's been attacked or identified as a thing in the last, a couple hundred years, you know, before, before this, it just was a non-existent, thing. So, I guess
it's a change in a Bible translation of a word.
Okay. Yeah. You're the biblical scholar. But yeah, I don't think that anybody who would hold such beliefs is any kind of bigoted belief or is unable to accept somebody in a way that gives them a hug and says, you know, I accept you for who you are. I support you for who you are. Because as Juan, you said, this peaks and valleys thing, it's as simple as looking at how things affect other people. Mm-hmm. And if you love some great organization and it's your part of because they've got this great overwhelming mission and yet they continually exude bigoted beliefs on the overall spectrum, that's bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And, you know, it sheds light on that whole aspect of, okay, is Masonry for everyone? And if we're going to agree that no, it's not for everyone for many of the reasons we've discussed, then what can we do about it? And if you look at the process by which a man is admitted into the fraternity, then we have to make sure that that process is ironclad as to prevent any kind of individual who shouldn't be a part of this. We have to prevent them from being from joining. So think about your lodge in particular. What is the process by which your lodge gets to know a man before he is given a petition? Are your brothers overly enthusiastic that someone is finally wanting to join your lodge and you're just giving the petition willy-nilly? Or are you being very vigilant to have steps in place to prevent people that are less than desirable for the organization? Think about whenever you allow one underperforming or one negative individual into another group, they have a lot of pull. They have a lot of negative influence that they can contribute to the group. It's almost like there seems to be more of a negative bias when it comes to the what do you call that? You know, think of a glass full of water, and imagine if there's a substance you can add to it that is going to tint it a certain color. You only need a tiny little bit in order for you to make it cloudy or make it dark. But the effort like that you need dye. In order, just like food dye, yeah. The effort that you will have to go through in order for you to remove that impact, it's almost impossible. You have to add so much more water to make that cloudiness dissipate?
Yeah, so to build on that, I have some stats for you. That according to modern research, you need 4 to 1. That's the ratio. You need 4 positive individuals to counter 1 negative individual in an organization, and so that the overall, you know, happiness, positivity, whatever of the organization state, you know, floats or sinks.
Harmony.
So, right. So yeah. So harmony is truly like 4 to 1. If you think of it, I mean, wow. It's not. It's really hard. So if you let 2 people in, guess what? You need 8 positive members to counteract the 2 negative. So all you need is like some crabby guy, some grumpy past master invites his buddy in, and then you got to have like half the lodge there to just counteract just those 2. So, and this is just organizational dynamics across large organizations. And so when you run these surveys across organizations, they look for that ratio. And I've seen like non-Masonic organizations score very low, like that they had like it was like 0.6 to 1 or something. It was really, really, really bad, of negative to positive people, and you could tell, and it was really, really, really hard for that organization to pull themselves out, and some of them didn't, right, without being on the chopping block. So so what you're saying is actually backed up by organizational science. So, thank you for that example. All right. I think we're at the point now where we can get to the final question. And this is an easy one tonight because it's the topic of the episode. Robert, is Masonry for everyone? Yes or no?
No, Masonry is not for everyone. I will quote the master's lectures once more. Trooping through our doors of our preparation rooms, we find an ever-increasing company composed of those from whose faces is missing the stamp of high intelligence, in whose eyes the torch of education has lighted no fires, and whose halting steps are led by friendly suggestion or quickened by the hope of gain. In other words, men are coming into the fraternity because their friends are asking them to, not because they're qualified to be members. And I think that probably suggests that we should address that in a level that requires us to take a more active role in the investigative process, to ask more questions, not less questions, to even tell them to submit.
Fewer questions, Robert. Questions are quantifiable.
Look, I want to see your Facebook posts.
Fewer Facebook posts.
You know, to quote
that was for the melatonin.
All right, fine. Another quote in here is, when an institution acquires a certain cheapness and popularity, it is usually declining or being ushered out of the world. Numbers have never made for quality, and the quantitative standard so noticeable in Freemasonry today must be repudiated if what Freemasonry can do for the world is to be accomplished. The theory that the more members made, the better for the world is a fallacy. Our institution cannot be greater than those of whom it is composed. And so that's what I would tell you. No, it's not for everybody. And I don't feel it's an elitist position to take. I think Freemasonry is there for the individual who is ready for it. Just like you wouldn't take college classes if you hadn't taken certain prerequisites. So with that, I would invite you to check out Whence Came You podcast, Sunday nights, 9:30. Thanks.
All right. Let's head over to Jason. Final question. Masonry for everyone? Yes or no?
No. If it was, why would we emphasize to every single candidate who gets raised that they have a duty to guard the West Gate?
I like it. It's very, very to the point. So that's hard to argue with. Okay. Juan, how about you?
Yeah, very, very well put by everyone thus far. No, well, Freemasonry is not for everyone. And if for whatever reason you feel, you know, for whatever reason, if you're not a member, but you feel that you wish you could, and for some reason you feel that you're not meant to be, or that perhaps right now you don't qualify, that should tell you these are things you need to work on, whether you join the fraternity or not. What is it that you think may be holding you back, or what do you think would work against you if you wanted to seek membership? And those are the things you need to work on, even if you never join the craft, just for the well-being of your own mind, of the people that surround you, and your overall contribution to society. Now, if you're a member already, and for some reason, any of these things that we talked about today resonate with you, and you feel that, well, maybe I snuck in, or maybe I slipped in, you know, you join Masonry for a reason. Just find the areas of your life, the rough areas of your Ashlar. You have the tools to make them better. Put them to the practice. Make sure that you're applying Freemasonry in a way that is going to make a difference in your life and the impact that that life is going to have on the people that surround you. So thank you all for watching and listening. I wanted to share something with you that I started in the Winding Stairs. If you wanted to have your lodge, they can have a custom-made shirt. I made the process very simple. It's just a three-step thing. You can have a custom lodge shirt just for your lodge within a couple of days. So check it out. Go to the Facebook page, and there's a couple of links there. And you can also find instructions by going to thewindingstairs.com. Thank you, brothers.
Nice. All right. Let's see. Hammy, you're up next.
So, no, Masonry is not for everyone, you know. Do I think that some people might deserve a better chance than others? Yes. But the fact is, it's not for everyone. It's not for the guy who with a felony background, you know, not everyone who's got a felony background, but generally speaking, it's not for him. We have to guard our Westgate against those guys. We also have to guard it against the guy that doesn't appear on the surface to be a bad person. But if you know something about that person, you need to keep them out. You know, when your opportunity comes up to vote to let him in, don't, you know, make sure that every person you bring into your lodge has good moral character. Now, you know, what defines that? At this point, I'm going to put that on your decision, not mine, not the guy next to you, yours. You know what you think that is. Now, if you think that's a bigot, well, you know, that'll work for you in your lodge. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. It is wrong, but, you know, hey, for that position, that's how it's going to work. It's going to be yours, you know. Now, comes and visits my lodge and I see the bigoted act, well, then we'll bring him up on Masonic charges and boot him out. But, you know, that's how Masonry works too, you know.
Right.
You know, it's interpretation. And if I can't, you know, if we can get enough guys to sit back and say that the conduct he is doing is un-Masonic, boom, he's out the door. Now, suspended, expelled, that it's all a matter of, you know, degrees and like what the Grand Lodge says to do, but that's where it comes down to, you know. And yes, it's what we're here for, is to make each one of us better. Now, can a guy who's got some bigoted ideas join the Masons and turn that around? Yes. But the first thing that has to happen in that is he has to believe that his bigoted ideas are wrong and he wants those to go away and work on that. That's where that has to come from. If he doesn't believe they're wrong, it's not going to work. So,
all righty. So thank you, Ham. Over to me, is Freemasonry for everyone? Obviously, no. And I'd say it's not for mediocrity either, right? That it's, you know, you wouldn't hire a fitness trainer to keep you the same weight. right? You wouldn't read self-help books to not apply any of it. Like, it's a waste of time, it's a waste of effort, right? But that's, we're here to become better men, and that's what I think we should be doing into the fraternity as well. So keep that going, keep that motivation, keep pushing through 2021, because we're almost on the backside of this COVID thing. It's finally good to hear, and I think it'll be great once we all start getting back to Lodge and giving all the brothers really awkward hugs. So I look forward to that. I want to thank all of you for watching, and keep searching for more light. Have a good night.
Wow.